Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Well, I can't wait to learn more about dealing with complex wounds and just wounds in general, for that matter. Open wound management in dogs and cats is what we're going to talk about here on the podcast. And joining me is the one and only Dr. Stephen Burchard. That's with me. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. But before we hit record, everybody, I just got to let you know, I just introduced him to the weens and he just lost his mind over the wires.
Absolutely. Cutest dog I've ever seen.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll be sure to Venmo you some money afterwards.
Sounds good.
Yes, Dr. Burchard, he's attended veterinary school at the University of Missouri's College of Veterinary Medicine. Then he was associate veterinarian in small animal practice right here in New Jersey for 2 years. And then he completed a small animal surgical residency program and master's degree at Purdue University School of Vet Med in 1981 and became a diplomat with the American College of Veterinary Surgeons in 84. And after 2 years as associate staff surgeon at the Animal Medical Center in New York City, he joined the Ohio State College of Veterinary Medicine faculty in 1983. He was head of animal surgery at Ohio State. And then while at Ohio, he received the Norden Distinguished Teacher Award, the Omega Tau Sigma Fraternity National Gamma Award for Distinguished Service to the Veterinary Profession, and the John Lyman or Lyman Jr. Award for Clinical Teaching Excellence and the Excellence Teaching Award. So many awards, my friend. My goodness. He retired from the Ohio State University, is now a consultant, author, and speaker at Catoon Education Conferences. His clinical specialty is small animal soft tissue surgery, and he has written numerous articles for referred journals and book chapters. And he's the chief editor of the Sounders Manual of Small Animal Practice, co-edited by Dr. Robert Sherding, and writes an educational blog for veterinarians, Veterinary Key Points, at drstephenburchard.blogspot.com. And he recently published a book, Their Tails Kept Wagging. Pets shows us new hope, shows us how hope, forgiveness, and love prevails. And it's a collection of inspiring stories about dogs and cats who survive critical illness, which we're going to close with asking a little bit more about that book, because I think that's beautiful. So let's get into it a little bit, my friend. So, you know, let's talk about bite wounds, for instance. Oh my gosh, so many different ways in which they present. But sometimes they're so difficult because you just don't know how bad it is. So why are bite wounds difficult to treat in dogs and cats?
Well, just like you say, the problem is that they're what we call the tip of the iceberg, because when the animal presents, it doesn't look too bad, really. They show a few punctures here and there. A lot of times those punctures are covered by the fur. So you don't really get an appreciation immediately how bad things are. But because it's a lot of times a big dog and a little dog, and obviously the little dog is the one that's the victim, the big dog tends to pick up the little dog and shake it. And it's that shaking that really causes the damage, because the teeth penetrate the skin, but then they shake and cause a lot of subcutaneous maceration of the tissue and damage, sometimes even damage down into the muscles and the muscle fascia. So this is a horrible situation for the dog that was victimized, because now there's all this tissue disruption and injection of bacteria. I mean, we all know that that dogs have, even though there's this mythology in non-veterinary world that dogs have a very clean mouth, we know that they harbor bacteria, all different species, both gram-negative, gram-positive, anaerobic, aerobic. So now we've got injection of all these bacteria into this macerated tissue, which is a perfect culture medium. And, you know, they can be a difficult thing to treat.
It's such a difficult thing to treat. And it's like you start clipping the fur away and you keep going and going and you're like, oh my goodness. You know, you see some of that subcutaneous emphysema that might be there. And like, perforate into the stomach or the thoracic cavity. So what is your treatment protocol for contaminated or necrotic wounds?
Yeah, well, that's so we do have a pretty standard protocol that we use. Obviously, first of all, it's just a really good evaluation of the patient. And that evaluation, it depends a lot on where the wounds are. For example, you know, if there are wounds on the leg, that's one thing. We want to make sure that there's no fractures or ligament and tendon injury. But if they're bite wounds over the chest or abdomen, now we're concerned, has there been internal damage done by the bites in the chest cavity? My gosh, I've seen so many dogs that as a result, again, probably a big dog, little dog situation. I don't want you to be afraid of your little guys, but anytime they go around a big dog, it's always something to think about. Yeah. If they're in the chest, you know, a lot of times the big dog has grabbed them on both sides of the chest with the mouth. And I've seen so many with rib fractures, pneumothorax, and even damage to the lung requiring a thoracic surgery and lung lobectomy. Now, that is kind of one of the worst case scenarios. But another one would be abdominal penetration, where you've got, injury to the spleen, maybe the gastrointestinal tract. So the first thing is really good evaluation that might include either radiographs or ultrasound, or maybe even both, blood work and all that. And then, just as you mentioned, really extensive clipping. That's such an important part, and I think sometimes overlooked by all of us, that especially when there's been trauma to both sides of the body, we need to get all that fur off of there, especially in long-haired dogs and cats. And really identify where the wounds are. And then kind of probe these little punctures and see if there's been undermining of the skin, because that's where it'll tell us, okay, this subcutaneous tissue, this deep tissue has been penetrated and undermined, and there's been significant injury. That's going to probably require us to open these areas up and do a really good flushing and debridement. And probably also leave those wounds open. So then we get into the day after day process of bandaging, lavage, antibiotics, and seeing that this wound can start to heal on its own, or is it going to need some kind of reconstructive surgery? A lot of times the wounds will heal. It's just a matter of giving them good in a good environment to stimulate healing.
Right. Yeah. And I'm really curious to get your opinion on wound lavage, because I hear so many different things out there lately in this day and age, in 23. What do you use for wound lavage? And, is it helpful to add, say, like antiseptic or antibiotics to the lavage solution?
Yeah, there's been so much research on that, and not just in veterinary medicine, but in human medicine. And there's, over the years, and during my career, I've been a surgeon now for almost 40 years. I hate to admit that, but it's true. But I've been through periods where we added antibiotics, like one of the aminoglycosides or penicillin or something like that. Then antiseptics like betadine or chlorhexidine. But honestly, you look at the research the studies comparing, really good scientific studies that compare these different lavage solutions, you find out that really just good old plain sterile saline is the best lavage for open wounds like that. I always told my students, and I didn't make up this cliche, but dilution is a solution to pollution. It's really all of that, the copious amounts of fluid flushing through that tissue that really gives us the benefit. So I just used normal sterile saline.
Great. That's good to know. Thank you.
And we do it in a very practical way. We just take those plastic bottles. It's not completely sterile the way we do it, but we just take those plastic bottles that has a plastic cap.
Yeah.
Just drill holes in the cap with like a 22 or 20 or 18 gauge needle. And then just invert it and use it like a shower. Yeah, just shower it down.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's great. I love it. Versus sometimes you have to use like the curved olive tip syringes or whatnot, which is fine. But that's easier. You just like turn the bottle upside down.
That's another thing. We went through this period where everybody liked using water pick.
Yeah.
For wound lavage. Well, I mean, it sounds good. But the problem is that you have to be very careful. If it's pressurized lavage, it can actually drive that debris and bacteria deeper into the tissue and kind of not really help the situation very much. So we just do low pressure lavage right out of the bottle.
That's great. Now with open wounds, I understand too, there's been a thought about the Telfa pads, because I've seen some doctors apply them, but I understand that it's not really recommended for those kinds of situations in dogs and cats with open wounds. So what types of dressings do you recommend?
Yeah, I don't like Telfa pads. The only time I use a Telfa pad is honestly in just a closed incision, just to kind of protect it from the animal, getting it soiled or licking. We really like any of the products that allow absorption. The main goal of this bandage is to wick that fluid off the surface of the wound. That will give the body a chance to start producing the granulation tissue. And that's the key. I try to just make it simple when I tell people about it. What we're trying to do is provide an environment where we can get granulation tissue in this wound. So in a really heavily contaminated wound, or one where there's a debris and maybe some questionable skin, even after we've done debridement, the good old standard wet to dry dressing is fine as a starting point, which is just plain old, surgical sponges, 4x4 sponges, moistened in sterile saline and then applied directly onto the wound. Then we usually put, so it'd be one or two moistened sponges and then one or two dry. And then after that, just a typical cast padding and vet wrap. Now, the other material that I really like that I've just started using, actually my wife, she's also a board certified surgeon. She's the one that started using it before me. It's a material called the Adaptic Touch. When we hear Adaptic, usually we think of the petroleum impregnated gauze, but this is not. This is a silicone based mesh material that is very absorptive. It allows absorption of fluid off the surface of the wound, which is great. But the really big advantage of it is it's non-adherent. So it doesn't hurt when you take it off. That's the only disadvantage of the wet to dry dressing. Over 24 hours, that sponge dries and it adheres to the wound. So when you peel that off, it does actually do a little bit of debridement, but it's painful. And you really, the animals either need to be sedated or sometimes put under general anesthesia. The Adaptic Touch has those advantages of the absorption without being adherent. So that's a really nice, material to use.
And are they pretty cost effective, those ones?
Yes, I can't tell you off the top of my head. They're obviously it's going to be more than it would the wet to dry dressings, but right. But still not very expensive, especially compared to some of the more complicated type dressings like hydrogels or there's actually a sort of battery operated gauze material now called Jumpstart, which uses an electrical activity to help stimulate wound healing. So it's going to be a lot less than that. Oh, yeah. Adaptive Touch.
Yeah, it's good to know. I just was writing that one down, so that's good. And right. Talk to me about the Penrose drains. Are they effective in providing the drainage for ineffective wounds? I'm sure it depends, but
and I've used them for years, but we have better materials now. We have better devices. The Penrose drain is really, I try not to be critical about it, but it's so last century, they were used in people. We used them a lot in veterinary medicine, but even when they're properly used, I don't think they're very effective, honestly. And the biggest problem with them is they're sticking out to the outside. So I see a lot of people put them in, but then they don't cover them with a bandage. And so now we've really got an open pathway for bacterial contamination into that deep tissue. The other thing I find is that over time, the exudate tends to dry out and plug up those drains.
Yes.
How many times when you pull the drain, all of a sudden a whole nother gush of purulent looking material comes flying out.
Yes.
And then you say to yourself, wow, this thing not only was not it was actually plugging up the drainage area. So yeah, I really don't use them much anymore. I don't recommend them. If we have a wound that we're going to close, we're not going to leave it open. We're going to close it. But we need drainage. Then we use a thing called the Jackson Pratt drain. It's a closed suction drain where it's actually actively pulling that fluid out of the deep tissue. And they're not very expensive. I don't know. I think they're, last time I looked, they might be like $7, $8, $9 a piece.
Oh, nice.
And they could be cleaned out and probably re-sterilized.
Oh, thank God for saying Penrose drain. You know how annoying those are to put in and then to take them out also? I agree. When I first started doing it, I'm like, is this really doing anything?
Yeah, exactly. No, you're right. And they're really not. I mean, I think we have a false sense of security because the first 24 hours or so, there is some drainage. But even then, the thing I don't like is that, yeah, there's drainage, but that's drainage is now getting down onto the hair. It's drying up on the skin around. It's just not clean and it's not very hygienic. Whereas the Jackson Pratt, the fluid is sucked out of the drain and then collected into this reservoir. It actually looks like a little hand grenade. So there's so many advantages. One is it's cleaner, more hygienic. You don't have this open area pathway for bacteria, and you can quantitate how much fluid you're getting. And also see what type of fluid it is. So it's got so many advantages. We even use it for dogs with peritonitis.
Mm.
It's pretty much most surgeons now find that the Jackson Pratt drain can actually effectively drain the peritoneal cavity in addition to wounds.
Wow, it's amazing. It's awesome. Yeah. And what about the tie-over bandages? This is something that I'm hearing a lot more of since I've been practicing and how they are being applied.
Yes, they're the greatest thing ever. They really are. They're so easy to do and so effective that now we're much more likely to tell people, especially with bite wounds, like we talked about, if there's been all that skin undermining and you're concerned that there's deep tissue injury and contamination, open that whole thing up and do a tie-over bandage. It's well described in the textbooks. I have a whole on my blog, that Veterinary Key Points blog. I have a whole article on how to put them in and how to maintain them and how to change them. There's a video of us changing one. So they are fantastic and they make us more likely now, I think, to recommend open wound management for contaminated wounds because they're so effective and they're so easy. You know, you just put these big loops of suture on the healthy skin around the wound, and then you pack it with whatever material you're using at the time, whether it's a wet to dry, an adaptive touch, whatever it is. Pack the wound, put sponges over it, and then some kind of water impervious material, like your drape material. Then you lace it up with umbilical tape. You just lace over like you would lace up your shoe. In 24 hours, you change it.
It's really good. Yeah.
They are really effective. And here's the thing. You can put them in almost any part of the body. I've even like cat abscess where the skin was necrotic all the way up on their face. I've had tie-overs on those cats and they tolerate them just fine.
I was just going to say, I rarely see animals going at them when we put them in.
Yeah, you know? Right.
So, yeah.
That's really true. Yeah.
So I think that's just like another win. I know an owner may perceive it like, oh my gosh, how am I going to, I think it's less work from an owner's perspective and the owner, the dogs and cats seem less bothered by it.
Yeah. And the one blog article I wrote, we have, it's actually my wife changing one and she's showing the owner how to do it. The owner was a nurse. And they felt like they could do it. And so she shows them step by step just how to do it. And it's fantastic. They're so effective.
Great information here, my friend. Great information. So wait, I got to ask you. So how long have you been married?
Well, that's a little complicated because I've been married previously, but my Yes, my wife Becky is who's a board certified surgeon. She and I have been married 13 years.
That's incredible. So I can imagine what the dinner conversations must be like.
Yes. Yeah, they're pretty ridiculous. And I have three children, two older kids, and then one younger guy right now. And I think because of these dinner conversations, none of my children have expressed any interest in veterinary medicine.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine, though. But I mean, it's great stuff. It really is. You're doing phenomenal work. I want to close about your published book here. Tell me about this book. I love it. Their Tails Kept Wagging.
Yeah.
Show us how hope, forgiveness, and love prevail.
Once I retired from Ohio State, I loved to write. But when I was at Ohio State, all my writing was very technical and, you know, research articles, book chapters, things like that. So I really wanted to try my hand at writing something more, not so much just for pet owners, but just telling stories.
Yeah.
And there's so many stories. I mean, you know, as well as I do, all veterinarians probably can tell stories, just amazing things. This was a series of cases that I had, dogs and cats, that just have really stood out in my mind as animals that endured pretty significant injury or illness, and just how courageous they were, how everybody was inspired by their strength as they made it through. I mean, there was the first chapter is a beautiful, absolutely gorgeous field trial Labrador who came in with a gastric dilatation bovulus and then just had one complication after another and required like four operations over about a 4-month period. Yeah, but he made his way through it. And another dog came in, it was shot with an arrow that penetrated the heart. Actually went all the way through the heart, entered the right ventricle and exited the left ventricle. So I have a whole chapter about that dog. So basically they're animals that I think showed tremendous courage. But also when I look back on it, I feel like the love and compassionate care that they got, I feel like had a major effect on their, you know, recovery through this whole thing. The caregivers, the owners, everybody, you know, spent so much time with them. So I just have this overall premise that when you add love to the treatment, that they're more likely to bounce back and make it through.
I just love that you share this, and especially coming from a surgeon. I mean, we know that they need postoperative care and instructions and so forth. You'll appreciate this. One of the things that I do on my post-op surgeries, on the invoice item, I actually put tender loving care, no charge.
Right.
And it's so, so true. When I talk about that, I said, you know, nurture them, take care of them, be there for them, be their caregiver. And it goes such a long way. I'm sure you experienced that in all your years of practicing as well. But right, it's so important.
It is. It absolutely is. And when I've talked to people, nurses, doctors and nurses, physicians will tell you the same thing, that they feel like the patients that were connected to family, had friends, and he came in to visit them, same thing, that they were more likely to recover or actually recovered quicker than people that are very isolated and don't have that kind of support network. So I think with pets, it's the same thing.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Burchard, for being on the show and for all the years of great work that you're doing and continue to do, have done and taught, and all these great accolades that you've received. And I just think it's wonderful. So glad to have you on the show.
Well, I love the things that you're doing. And I think just, you know, educating everybody and having these kind of sessions, it's fantastic. It's so much better than the old days when, you know, you didn't really have these kinds of resources like the internet now to help you with your practice. So thank you for all that you do as well.
Oh, my pleasure, my honor. So thank you so much again. And we'll see you soon in the live events too, everyone. So we're going to be having Dr. Steven join us through our conferences throughout the next couple of years as well. So it's going to be an honor to have him and share his expertise with us. And thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to rate today's podcast. Always helps us out significantly. This is a really good one. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.